Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, January 5th, 2021. Page 2, read. Healthcare professional overcomes difficult childhood. Special to the Odessa American by Rebecca Bell, MC Executive Director, Institutional Advancement. Midland. Sarah Lack vividly recalls her childhood growing up in Hobbs, New Mexico, and living in poverty. It was a single mother household, Lack remembered. There were a lot of times when we didn't know where we would get our next meal or have a roof over our heads. My mother worked extremely hard to provide what she could and instill the values of family and working hard in my brother and me. School was tough as well. I had really poor eyesight and struggled with reading and spelling because of it. My mom couldn't afford medical care or qualify for assistance, so I wasn't diagnosed and prescribed glasses until I was in about the fifth grade. It definitely affected me in all aspects of my life, and I certainly never thought I would be where I am today, having faced those struggles. It just goes to show that anyone can overcome adversity and make something of themselves. Midland College's sonography program definitely helped in the outcome of my life. Sarah Lack is now an echocardiographer working for Norley General Hospital in Lovington, New Mexico. As such, she uses imaging technology to help cardiologists diagnose heart problems in patients. She operates ultrasound equipment that provides moving 2D or 3D images of the heart and its chambers. Lack graduated from Hobbs High School in 2003 and then enrolled in New Mexico Junior College, NMJC, using federal financial aid and working multiple jobs to pay her tuition and fees. She received 2 associate degrees from NMJC. Lack eventually accepted a medical office assistant, licensed massage therapist position in Hobbs, working for Conrad Dean, a holistic medicine specialist. She found that she enjoyed working in a healthcare atmosphere. Dean also took notice of her medical interest and skill. Many of our patients were from the local Mennonite community, Lack explained. Dean decided that he needed to expand his practice to provide care to the pregnant women of that community, so he suggested that I look into becoming a sonography technician. The idea intrigued me. After doing some research, I discovered that Midland College had a sonography program, so I applied. One of the most alluring things to me about the sonography program was it is super affordable. However, during the time that Lack was waiting to find out if she had been accepted into the program, Dean passed away. His medical practice closed, and Lack found herself out of a job. She worked as a bank teller in Hobbs for a short time, and then landed a position working once again in a healthcare setting in the pharmacy department of Lee Regional Hospital, and became a certified pharmacy technician. Lack was still interested in pursuing a sonography certificate, so when she received notification of her acceptance into Midland College's sonography program, she eagerly jumped at the chance to begin the program. Since I already had 2 associate degrees, the only general studies class I had to take for the sonography program was physics, Lack explained. Physics has a reputation of being a difficult subject, but it wasn't really that terrible. Lack said that the sonography program probably also saved her life. One day, in class, she volunteered for other students to scan her. During the course of the scan, the instructor could tell that there was something on her thyroid. As it turned out, it was a tumor. The thyroid tumor was biopsied during her clinical rotation, so the first biopsy she witnessed as a student was actually her own tumor. In May 2009, Lack completed Midland College's sonography program and passed the SPI, Sonography Principles and Instrumentation Registry Exam. She continued to work in the hospital pharmacy and married her husband, Christopher Marquez. In 2011, their son Maddox was born. In 2014, when Maddox was 3, Lack was offered the opportunity to become a sonography technician. She continued working in the pharmacy for another year while balancing the responsibilities in the sonography department. Eventually, she transitioned full-time into the sonography department and became the lead sonography technician. Lack is now a registered sonography technician in several areas. She has successfully passed the American Registry for Diagnostic Medical Sonography, ARDMS, exams in obstetrics, gynecology, OBGYN, abdomen, ABD, and breast, BR, which are the areas of studies offered through Midland College's sonography program. She also went on to successfully pass the American Registry for Diagnostic Cardiac Sonography, RDCS, in adult echocardiography, AE, and the Registry for Vascular Sonography, VT. She recently took the Pediatric Sonography Registry exam and is awaiting those results. Lack worked at Lee Regional Hospital for a total of 11.5 years. The last 5 of those years, she was a sonography tech doing everything from general sonography to cardiac and vascular sonography. This past January, Lack left Lee Regional Hospital and accepted a position working as a cardiac and vascular sonography technician at Norley General Hospital. Lack and her family still live in Hobbs, where her husband Christopher is employed in the oil and gas industry. Their son, Maddox, is now 9. Her 18-year-old stepdaughter, Madison, is thinking of pursuing a career in the healthcare industry. Lack said she is grateful for the opportunities Midland College's sonography program has given her to help her find a career as a sonography technician. She said it has greatly changed her life by securing a financially stable career. Odessa American for January 5th, 2021, Section A, page 3. Don't mess with Texas Scholarship Contest opens to high school seniors. Contest applications due March 31st. OANews@OAOA.com. Austin. The Texas Department of Transportation detailed in a press release that applications are now available for the 2021 Don't Mess with Texas Scholarship Contest. This contest reportedly recognizes Texas high school seniors who are taking an active role in litter prevention in their school or community. The contest is open to any Texas high school senior currently attending public, private, or home school and planning to attend an accredited college or university in the fall of 2021 semester. We're looking for students who are developing exciting and creative solutions to keep Texas litter-free. Becky Ozuna, program administrator for the Don't Mess with Texas program, stated in the release. We aim to shine a spotlight on their innovations in the hope of inspiring other Texans to do their part to keep our state beautiful. The contest will award a total of $9,000 in scholarships to 3 winners in May 2021, the press release stated. To enter the Don't Mess with Texas scholarship contest, visit don'tmesswithtexas.org. Applications must be received via online submission by 5 p.m. CDT, March 31st. Sponsors for the Don't Mess with Texas scholarship include Bucky's and iHeartMedia. Medical Center reports COVID-19-related employee death. OANews@OAOA.com. A longtime Medical Center Hospital employee from Ector County died late Sunday morning of COVID-19-related causes, according to a Medical Center Health System news release. The employee, a 55-year-old male, had worked for MCHS for more than 32 years. He was admitted to MHS on December 13th. The deceased is the second hospital employee to die from COVID since the pandemic began, according to hospital officials. It is an extremely sad day to lose an employee, MCHS CEO Russell Tippin noted in a prepared statement. Quote, the MCH staff are a family, and it impacts every single person here. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the family and staff as we say goodbye to one of the best and friendliest employees you could ask for. End quote. Church offers free clothing. OA News at OAOA.com. Sherwood Church of Christ, 4900 North Dixie Boulevard, offers free clothing on the first Saturday of every month. With so many families in the community are losing their jobs due to COVID and the downturn in oil, the Sherwood Clothes Closet is an opportunity for people to find needed clothing items for the entire family. Hours are 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Masks are required to comply with city orders and to protect each other from spreading the virus. Mental Munchies Set, OA News at OAOA.com. Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center's Psychiatry Department will host free virtual monthly webinars covering multiple mental and behavioral health concerns. Each month, the public can join in through Zoom and listen to TTUHSC physicians and residents speak on topics ranging from depression, autism in children, PTSD, eating disorders, and much more. The attached flyer lists out each month's topic. The public can find more information on TTUHSC Permian Basin's Facebook page or by emailing pb-psychadmin@ttuhsc.edu. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, January 5th, 2021, Section A, page 7, OAOA.com. Man charged with choking, punching girlfriend in bar parking lot. OA News at OAOA.com. A 34-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly choked and punched his girlfriend in a bar parking lot. John Edward Stinson, Jr., was charged with assault by strangulation or suffocation, family violence, a third-degree felony, and assault, family violence, a Class A misdemeanor. The reported assault happened at 2:10 a.m. December 31st at Succi's Sports Bar and Grill, located at 1541 North JBS Parkway Boulevard, an Odessa Police Department affidavit stated. Officers reportedly made contact with Stinson and Erica Garza, who both stated they were in a dating relationship. Officers saw that Garza had bruising on the right side of her face, cuts and bruising on both her upper and lower lips, and bruising on her neck. Garza stated she and Stinson were in an argument in her car when he began to hit her in the face with a closed fist, the affidavit stated. Garza continued to detail that Stinson pulled her out of the vehicle, pushed her to the ground, and placed his hand around her neck until she lost consciousness. Garza stated that when she regained consciousness, Stinson was striking her in the face. Officers reportedly saw that Stinson had redness and swelling on the knuckles of both hands, along with bleeding scrapes to both of his elbows, knees, and ankles. Stinson was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has two bonds, totaling $25,000, and was still in custody as of Monday afternoon, jail records show. Man charged with pointing handgun at girlfriend. OA News at OAOA.com. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed that a 22-year-old man pointed a handgun at his girlfriend. Dominique Jefferson was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony. Officers were dispatched at 6:45 p.m. December 31st to the Brady Station Apartments, located at 4320 East 53rd Street, in reference to an unknown problem, the affidavit stated. The complainant, identified as Kiara Watson, reportedly told officers that her boyfriend, identified as Jefferson, picked her up from work. Watson stated that Jefferson was mad and pulled a firearm out, which was later identified as a black Taurus G2C 9mm, and told her, "Let's see what's faster, the door or a bullet." Officers contacted Jefferson, who was read his Miranda rights, the affidavit stated. Jefferson waived his rights and agreed to talk with officers. Jefferson stated that he did pull the firearm out, but didn't point it at Watson. Jefferson was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has one bond, totaling $50,000, and was still in custody as of Monday afternoon, jail records show. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, January 5th, 2021. Opinion. National View. Trump gives Schumer an assist. The Point. The president writes a $2,000 check to make Democrats the majority. President Trump finally signed the COVID-19 relief bill and 2021 budget Sunday, December 27th, but not before giving a big assist to Democratic hopes of gaining control of the Senate in the two runoff elections on January 5th. Current GOP Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was left last week trying to undo the significant political damage. Mr. Trump had been insisting that Congress write checks of $2,000 each to most Americans rather than the $600 in the bill. His own Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin, negotiated the $600 figure, but after the bill passed, Mr. Trump decided that wasn't enough. Never mind that the $2,000 would go to tens of millions of Americans who have kept their jobs and maintained their incomes during the pandemic. It would also add some $350 billion or more to a federal deficit that is already into the trillions of dollars. The economy won't benefit since the recipients aren't going to change their behavior, knowing it's merely a one-time check. Senate Republicans opposed the $2,000 for these sound reasons, but Mr. Trump has put them in a political spot. Democrats immediately joined Mr. Trump's call for the $2,000, and last Monday they passed the larger amount through the House, 275 to 134. That left Mr. McConnell with a tough call of barring a vote as Democrats bang away in TV ads in Georgia against GOP incumbents David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler. Or he could have held a vote, which would split the GOP caucus and upset fiscally conservative voters. Either way, it amounts to a Donald Trump in-kind contribution to Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden. By all accounts, Mr. Trump is angry about his election defeat, and he is lashing out at anyone who won't indulge his hopeless campaign to overturn it. This includes Senate Republicans, who need to win in Georgia to retain their majority and block Mr. Biden's ability to indulge the Democratic left. Mr. Trump's narcissism isn't news, but if Republicans lose the two Georgia seats and their majority, Republicans across the country should know to thank Mr. Trump for their 2021 tax increase. The Wall Street Journal. The pandemic is a national test that we failed. Over the past century, there have been times when Americans showed they can unite to overcome formidable challenges. Winning World War II, sending men to the moon, bringing down Soviet communism. The coronavirus pandemic will not be remembered as one of them. It's fair to say that we have done many things right, individually and collectively. Most Americans, most of the time, have abided by the counsel of public health experts that we wear masks, socially distance, and avoid large indoor gatherings. Most governors and mayors have taken prudent steps to curb transmission of the virus. In all, we've done pretty well. But pretty well is not good enough. On a final exam, getting most of the answers right can mean an F. Reality doesn't grade on a curve. To date, more than 336,000 people have died of COVID-19, and things are getting worse, not better, with nearly twice as many deaths in December as in November. The rollout of vaccines will eventually turn things around, but not before tens of thousands more people are dead. Many of the deaths so far were inevitable once this virus found its way to our shores, but many are the direct result of reckless, careless, or uninformed choices that could have been avoided. The failure started at the top with President Donald Trump. Month after month, he insisted that the pandemic would soon be just a memory. March 6th, it'll go away. October 24th, it is going away. It's rounding the turn. Who can forget his forecast of packed churches on Easter, or son-in-law Jared Kushner's prediction that by July, the country could be really rocking again? The administration's false hopes were regrettable, not just because they were wrong, but because they promoted mistaken policies and reckless conduct. Many red state governors refused to require masks in public, and others did so only after needless delays. Some Republican governors even took steps to block local governments from issuing such mandates. The official resistance to basic precautions spurred widespread defiance. Anyone who has taken a trip by car can attest that an alarming number of people go into grocery stores, gas stations, and motel lobbies without face coverings. They are following the example of a president who was so contemptuous of caution that his White House became a cluster of infection. Trump also mocked mask wearers and held mass gatherings that were perfectly crafted to spread the disease. A study by Stanford economists estimated that 18 Trump campaign rallies produced 30,000 additional cases of COVID-19 and 700 deaths. But let's not put all the blame for these on him. Each of the people who attended those crowded events made the choice to risk getting the virus and then passing it on to people who chose not to attend. Trump was irresponsible, and so were they. Even some officials who embraced essential public health measures, however, sabotaged the effort through their own selfishness. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot got her hair styled when hair salons were closed by state order. California Governor Gavin Newsom violated his own rules by attending a birthday party at a fancy restaurant. Denver Mayor Michael Hancock told his constituents not to travel for Thanksgiving before flying off to see relatives. One obstacle to universal cooperation is that many people who take risks don't get the virus, which encourages them to take more risks. Another is that most of us know someone who has gotten it and suffered no serious effects, which creates a false sense of security. If COVID were far more contagious and lethal, as Ebola is, Americans would have been more careful. Self-discipline isn't easy in the absence of immediate obvious dangers or rewards. But the fact that an obligation is hard is not a license to disregard it. Even in places with tight restrictions, there is little enforcement, letting some people flout the most vital rules. The English writer G.K. Chesterton said, "The Christian ideal has not been tried and found wanting. It has been found difficult and left untried." Too many of us have taken the same approach to the best practices for combating the coronavirus. Huge numbers of people deserve credit for diligently striving to defeat the virus, but too many have been indifferent or rebellious. Americans like to think that as a nation, we are capable of meeting any challenge. Looks like we've been fooling ourselves. Stephen Chapman. Chapman writes for the Chicago Tribune, as well as being a syndicated columnist. Find out more. Read Chapman's daily blog. www.chicagotribune.com/news/opinion/Chapman. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, January 5th, 2021. Obituaries. Margaret Jacqueline Morning Abbott, Odessa. Our sunshine is missing a ray of light, and numerous Odessa stores, along with QVC, lost one of their best customers on December 23, 2020. Margaret Morning Abbott of Odessa, Texas, died at the age of 73 after battling a courageous 6-year battle against leukemia. Born to the late Dale Morning and Helen Freeman, January 24, 1947, in Enid, Oklahoma, Margaret devoted her life to raising 4 perfect daughters. In her eyes, Debbie, Judy, Brenda, and Susie were her world, second to no one. When asked about her many careers, she proudly announced her job titles: domestic engineer, peacekeeper, accountant, teacher, seamstress, chef, maid, mom, grandmother, great-grandmother, and so many more. She was everything to everyone. She married Donald Worth Abbott, and they lived happily in Odessa, Texas. Margaret is survived by 4 daughters and 1 stepson: Deborah Hardaway and husband Jeffrey of Houston, Texas; Pastor Judith Swartz and husband Richard of Menard, Texas; Brenda Brown Matson of Round Rock, Texas; and Susan Norman and husband Brett of Round Rock, Texas; Donnie Abbott and wife Rosemary. She is survived by 6 grandchildren, 6 great-grandchildren. She is also survived by brother Richard and Pam Morning of Plano, brother Dell and Sherry Morning, and extended sisters Cindy Kimberling and the late Sue Stogstill. Graveside services will be held at Leveland Cemetery on Tuesday, January 5th, 2021, at 3:30 p.m. Clarence Leon C.L. Grumbles, Jr., Odessa. Clarence C.L. Leon Grumbles, Jr., April 2, 1948 to December 27, 2020. C.L. is preceded in death by Amy Grumbles, daughter; Clarence Leon Grumbles, Sr., father; Louise Grumbles, mother; and Kathleen Grumbles, stepmother. C.L. is survived by Betty Mosley, sister; Tony Prater, sister; Shane Martin, Scott Martin, and his children Shania, Gabe, and Damon; Stephen Grumbles and his children Alyssa, Emily, Audrey, and Drew; Kinley Hunt, granddaughter; Brian Dodson and his children Rayleigh, Brian Jr., Thania, Kamoni, and Valkyrie; Breon Dodson and her children Jasmine, Kalissa, Braden, and Tyler; Blake Dodson and his children Jaden, Blake Jr., Brooke, and Claire; Bo Dodson and his children Elliot and River; and Britt Staggs and her children Taven and Thomas. C.L. was a beloved husband, father, grandfather, and great-grandfather who went to be with the Lord on December 27, 2020. He loved life and his family above all else, with a passion for motorcycles. He regretted nothing and lived a full and happy life. The viewing will be held Wednesday, January 6, 2021, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. A celebration of his life will be held at his home on Thursday, January 7, 2021, from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. Lawrence Leo Barber, Jr., Odessa. Lawrence Leo Barber, Jr., age 82, of Odessa, Texas, passed away December 13, 2020, in Odessa. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Friday, January 8, 2021, at Cumberland Presbyterian Church, 1415 Grandview Avenue, in Odessa, Texas, with Jimmy Braswell officiating. Interment to follow at 2 p.m. Friday, January 8, 2021, at Monahans Municipal Cemetery, 400 South Helen, Monahans, Texas, 79756. Lawrence was born June 26, 1938, to Lawrence Leo Barber and Daisy Helen Barber Wood in Seagraves, Texas. He married Helen Irene Adams Muldrow on February 16, 1980, in Las Vegas, Nevada. Lawrence returned to Odessa in 1980, where he practiced law from 1980 through 2020. He received head rights as a member of the Osage Indian tribe. Lawrence was a 32nd degree Mason and past president of the Rotary Club of Greater Odessa. Lawrence L. Barber Jr. is preceded in death by Helen Barber, wife, Christopher Howell, grandson, Lawrence Leo Barber, father, Daisy Helen Barber, Wood, mother, Paul Barber, brother, and J.J., Ace, and Joker, his West Highland White Terriers. He is survived in death by Deborah Barber Howell, daughter, Larry Wayne Barber, son, Lisa Barber and Frank Koontz, daughter and son-in-law Jeffrey Agnew, grandson Caitlin and Nate Perez, granddaughter and grandson-in-law Mateo Perez, great-grandson Robert and Carol Ann Barber, brother and sister-in-law Mike Barber, nephew and Jackson, his West Highland White Terrier. Memorials may be given to Breast Cancer Research and Odessa Meals on Wheels. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send family condolences, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Travis Elton Rice, Stinnett. Travis Elton Rice, 45, passed away Sunday, January 3, 2021. Funeral services will be held 10:30 a.m. on Friday, January 8, 2021, at First Baptist Church, Stinnett, with Pastor Cade Morrison and Pastor Billy Paul Vinson officiating. Burial will follow in Stinnett Cemetery under the direction of Minton Chatwell Funeral Directors of Borger. The family will receive friends from 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, January 6, 2021, at the funeral home. Services will be live-streamed on the bottom of his obit page at www.mintonchatwell.com and will also be uploaded to the same page after the services for 90 days. In lieu of flowers, his memory may be honored with a gift to Helen's Kids, P.O. Box 989, Fritch, Texas, 79036, or to Canadian River Cowboy Church Bible Camp, P.O. Box 142, Borger, Texas, 79008. Travis was born May 14, 1975, in Perryton, Texas, to Dwight Rice and Karen Johnson Rice. He married Terry Dozier on March 9, 2002, in Borger. He is preceded in death by his grandparents, Audie Elton and Naomi Rice of Guymon, Johnny and Marge Johnson of Guymon, grandparents-in-law L.T. Dozier of Stinnett, and Leon and Eldora Brower of Stinnett. Survivors include his wife, Terry Rice of Stinnett, son Rowdy Rice of Stinnett, daughter Audie Rice of Stinnett, parents Dwight and Karen Rice of Stinnett, brother Dwight Rice and wife Andrea of Borger, sister Shelley Heatley and husband Brent of Amarillo, mother and father-in-law Randy and Nancy Dozier of Lorena, Texas, sister-in-law Amy Mundy and husband Sean of Waco, grandmother-in-law Charlene Dozier of Pampa, nephews Randy Heatley, Jace Heatley, Mason Mundy, Ivory Mundy, nieces Natalie Rice, Lindy Heatley, Z.J. Mundy, and a host of extended family. Death notices. Hortensia Ramirez Hernandez, Odessa. Hortensia Ramirez Hernandez, 74, of Odessa, died Sunday, December 20th, 2020, in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled to be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, January 6, 2021, at Lighthouse of Apostolic, burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Joe Montano, Odessa. Joe Montano, 52, of Odessa, died Thursday, December 24th, 2020, in Odessa. Mass is scheduled to be celebrated at 1 p.m. on Wednesday, January 6th, 2021, at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Father Mark is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Esther Miranda Montano, Odessa. Esther Miranda Montano, 68, of Odessa, died Sunday, December 27th, 2020, in Odessa. Mass is scheduled to be celebrated at 1 p.m. on Wednesday, January 6th, 2021, at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Father Mark is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Norma Linda Ortiz Quezada, Odessa. Norma Linda Ortiz Quezada, 55, of Odessa, died Sunday, December 27th, 2020, in Odessa. Mass is scheduled to be celebrated at 10 a.m. Thursday, January 7th, 2021, at St. Anthony Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Crane County Cemetery. Father Frank Chavez is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Manuel Soltero Luna, Odessa. Manuel Soltero Luna, 85, of Odessa, died Friday, January 1st, 2021, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled to be held at 1 p.m., Thursday, January 7th, 2021, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, January 5th, 2021. This is page 2, the news page. This article is entitled, OPEC Plus Emerges from Chaos of 2020 to Face Delicate Balancing Act, by Grant Smith, Bloomberg. As one of the most tumultuous years in oil's history ends, a delicate task now confronts OPEC Plus. The alliance of producers, led by Saudi Arabia and Russia, must decide whether it can continue to restore crude supplies without capsizing the price recovery they spent most of 2020 working to achieve. Moscow believes that the group, which slashed output during the pandemic, can revive another 500,000 barrels a day of idle capacity in February, on top of an increase scheduled for this month. Riyadh, which has favored greater caution, is keeping its own views under wraps. It feels like OPEC Plus is trying to steer a giant oil tanker through a narrow strait, said Giovanni Stonovo, an analyst at UBS Group AG in Zurich. Whatever they ultimately decide, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its partners are leaving nothing to chance. With its gathering this week, the coalition is switching to meeting every month, rather than just a few times a year, in order to fine-tune production levels more precisely. After the brutal lessons delivered over the past 12 months, the impulse to micromanage is understandable. Crude's crash. Last year's challenges for OPEC Plus began in February when oil demand in China collapsed 20% as the world's biggest importer locked down to beat the emerging coronavirus. Riyadh and Moscow then clashed over how to respond to the demand shock, a dispute that shattered the 23-nation alliance and ushered in a vicious price war. By April, the world was so awash in crude that U.S. futures traded below zero for the first time in history. Relations were only mended after the intervention of U.S. President Donald Trump. And unlike the mediator, having lambasted the cartel for years, Trump nonetheless brokered a peace deal that resulted in OPEC's biggest ever output cuts. Phasing out those curbs is provoking new controversies. Last month, OPEC Plus talks ran into a five-day stalemate as Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, for years stalwart allies in both political and energy spheres, disagreed over how quickly to revive the idled barrels. Allies split. While the kingdom wanted to delay any increases for 3 months, its neighbor, eager to monetize investments in capacity and promote a new regional oil benchmark, pushed for a speedier timetable. Though a compromise was reached, the brief rupture in their long-standing partnership, which at one point saw Abu Dhabi hint at eventually leaving OPEC, has left an ominous shadow. The pace of restoring output will occupy the producers this week. Currently idling 7.2 million barrels a day, or about 7% of world supplies, they have resolved to return a further 1.5 million barrels a day in carefully calibrated installments. Russian Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak has signaled his readiness to proceed, saying last month that prices are in an optimal range of $45 to $55 a barrel. If OPEC Plus refrains from bolstering exports, its competitors will simply fill the gap, he said. The market needs the oil, said Jan Stewart, a global energy economist at Cornerstone Macro LLC. The prevailing view in OPEC Plus seems to be that you have to go for market share. You cannot subsidize the return of U.S. shale. Novak's Saudi counterpart, Energy Minister Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman, hasn't publicly expressed a preference beyond his intention to keep speculators on their toes. There is a solid case for going ahead with the production increase. Oil prices have stabilized above $50 a barrel in London, despite OPEC's pledge of extra supply, bolstered by vaccine developments and robust fuel use in Asia. Supply and demand should remain broadly balanced in the first half of the year, according to the Paris-based International Energy Agency. The market has underlying support, and as such, should shrug off a modest increase in OPEC Plus supply, said Doug King, Chief Investment Officer of the Merchant Commodity Fund, which manages $170 million. It's a choice that might also come as a relief to OPEC Plus members like Iraq. Baghdad is engulfed in a mounting economic crisis that is only exacerbated by limits on oil sales and is struggling to get through a backlog of overdue output cuts from 2020. Uncertain demand. But there's also an argument for holding back the extra barrels. Oil refiners haven't yet had a chance to absorb this month's supply hike, and a more infectious virus strain is clouding the outlook for demand. While the IEA anticipates no fresh surplus, it warned that the existing inventory overhang will linger to the end of the year if OPEC Plus opens the taps. Despite the market's rebound, crude prices remain far below the levels most OPEC members need to cover government spending. Finally, OPEC Plus must navigate the impact of incoming U.S. President Joe Biden, who has signaled readiness to revive a nuclear pact with Iran that could release more than 1 million barrels a day of oil exports currently under U.S. sanctions. OPEC Plus can likely pull off another production increase in February, said Bob McNally, president of consultant Rapidan Energy Group and a former White House official. But in terms of vanquishing last year's COVID glut, they're far from out of the woods. This article is entitled OPEC Plus Talks Drag On as Russia's Supply Hike Proposal is Rejected by Salma El-Wardani, Dina Krenikova, Javier Blas, and Grant Smith, Bloomberg. OPEC Plus talks were unexpectedly suspended on Monday after a majority of members, including Saudi Arabia, opposed Russia's proposal for a February supply hike. Discussions will resume on Tuesday,
giving the group more time to resolve differences over how much extra oil the market can take as the accelerating coronavirus pandemic threatens a wave of tighter lockdowns. The extension of talks casts doubt on the production increase of 500,000 barrels a day the market had been expecting for February. It also calls into question similar supply boosts traders had penciled in for March and April. Differences of opinion between Saudi Arabia and Russia, the two de facto leaders of OPEC Plus, can make for tricky meetings. While Moscow appeared to be outnumbered on this occasion, the group typically requires a consensus among all members before concluding talks. Failure to reach a compromise is rare, but can have damaging consequences, notably last year's month-long price war. Before ministers gather again on Tuesday, they will have the chance to hold bilateral talks and consult with their home governments, delegates said. In Monday's video conference, the initial positions of Moscow and Riyadh were diametrically opposed. Saudi Energy Minister Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman proposed rolling back the 500,000 barrel a day production increase the group made this month, delegates said. His Russian counterpart, Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak, wanted to maintain that supply hike and add the same again in February. Urging caution. In his opening remarks, Prince Abdulaziz highlighted the risks to the oil market from a more infectious strain of the coronavirus, which has heightened the economic risks even as the rollout of vaccines has buoyed prices. At the risk of being seen as a killjoy in the proceedings, I want to urge caution, he said. The new variant of the virus is a worrying and unpredictable development. The prince, who has consistently sought to keep a tight rein on supply, also indicated he would accept rolling over current output levels into February, they said. Algeria, Nigeria, Oman, Iraq, Kuwait, and the United Arab Emirates were also in favor of holding supply steady, delegates said, asking not to be named because the meeting was private. Kazakhstan supported Novak's position. Russia is currently focusing on market share, while a number of other countries value prices, Iran's oil minister Bijan Namdar Zangaray told reporters, according to the ministry's news service, Shana. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies are currently idling 7.2 million barrels a day, or about 7% of world supplies, and have planned to return a further 1.5 million barrels a day in installments over the coming months. The group is already taking a cautious approach, agreeing in December to meet every month rather than just a few times a year in order to fine-tune production levels more precisely and avoid capsizing the price recovery they spent most of 2020 working to achieve. Other prominent voices from the alliance have echoed Prince Abdulaziz's caution. There's a need to be wary of the repercussions of the second wave of the pandemic, state-run Kuwait news agency reported on Monday, citing a statement from Oil Minister Mohammed Al-Fares. OPEC Secretary General Mohammed Barkindo said at Sunday's preparatory meeting that there are still many downside risks to juggle. Tighter lockdowns. Brent crude, the international benchmark, fell 1.8% to $50.87 a barrel on Monday. Prices rallied earlier in the day on strong demand from Asia due to freezing weather, but faltered later amid signs of tighter lockdowns in Europe. The case for another small OPEC Plus output increase in February is underpinned by a recovery in the oil prices, which have gained more than a third since the emergence of the first COVID vaccines last year. Russia's Novak said last month that OPEC Plus should proceed with its supply increase because prices are in an optimal range of $45 to $55 a barrel. If OPEC Plus refrains from bolstering exports, its competitors will simply fill the gap, he said. Yet, there are also reasons to think the group will take a more cautious approach. Restrictions on movement are still in place in a number of countries amid a new virus strain of the virus, Barkindo said.
It's too soon to know how key sectors of the economy will be affected, and for the tourism and leisure industries, the return to pre-crisis levels could take a couple of years.
Habits, this husband must stop right away. Dear Dr. Roach, there is much information about the spread of COVID germs from coughing, sneezing, speaking, etc. However, I have not seen anything about two other ways that could also spread the germs. Could you please address these in your column? 1. Spitting. My husband and many others spits on the ground frequently, especially during exercise. 2. Disposal of tissues. After my husband blows his nose, he will drop them on the floor and build a pile to take to the trash when he gets up. He also will drop them on the floor of the car below his seat until he gets back home. I have asked him to refrain from both of these practices, but he continues. I also think these two unsanitary practices spread other germs as well. Please clarify. Anon. Answer. That's not merely unpleasant, it is a possible way of transmitting viruses. It also fails any basic level of acceptable behavior. Viruses can live for long periods of time in wet conditions, such as a wet tissue. Once completely dry, viruses become non-infectious within hours, or possibly a few days, but cleaning with soap and water or cleaning fluids is effective at disinfecting surfaces. If my opinion is helpful, I will certainly say that hygiene and politeness require that he dispose of any used tissues in the trash can immediately, and that spitting is both rude and potentially dangerous during the pandemic. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, January 5th, 2021, etc. Parents clash over who should discipline their children. Dear Abby, I am a single father of three wonderful kids. When my wife and I separated, we agreed to 50-50 custody and a property settlement. Everything went smoothly. A year later, I requested and was granted full custody of my children. Their mom has visitation, but that's it. Shortly after my separation, I met a woman and we became good friends. I waited about a year before introducing her to my children because I wanted to make sure I knew her first. Although we are not, quote, officially in a relationship, she has been more than willing to step in and help with the children. In a few instances, she has disciplined them because of bad behaviors. It usually entails talking to them about what they did wrong and some sort of consequence, loss of toys or privileges. When they went to visit their mother and she heard about it, she wasn't happy. She called me very upset, saying my friend had no right to discipline our kids. I see nothing wrong with it, but I am second-guessing myself. Some advice, please? Concerned Dad in California. Dear Concerned Dad, if your lady friend's discipline ever went further than a talking to, then their mother is right. Because you have primary custody of the children, you should be the parent who levies penalties if they misbehave and a punishment is warranted. Dear Abby, I'm a very social person and part of a close-knit friend group, but my boyfriend is on the introverted side. Although he is sweet and thoughtful, he doesn't have many friends of his own, and he tends to enjoy independent hobbies. Since learning that my friendships are very important to me, he has made a huge effort with my friends and their boyfriends. In the past, he invited them to movies, reached out and attempted to engage them in multiple ways. I have watched from a distance, hoping they could forge a connection, but they ignore or avoid him, and he recently shared his worry that they don't like him. I don't blame him for thinking that, and I'm starting to feel sad for him and frustrated with my friends. At what point do I talk to them about this? Should I just let the relationships happen organically, if they happen? Should I interfere at all? Torn in Texas. Dear Torn, you didn't mention how old you are or how long you and your boyfriend have been involved. I do not think it would be interfering to ask your friends why they seem unwilling to accept him. Their answers might be enlightening. At some ages, circles have formed and it's difficult to break in and gain acceptance. If there is something about your boyfriend that makes them uncomfortable, it would be better if you knew what it was. However, ultimately, he should socialize with you and these friends at his comfort level. You may also need to seek out new friends and cultivate relationships together as a couple. Dear Abby, Abigail Van Buren, write Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Capricorn and a moon in Virgo until 11:42 p.m. when the moon enters Libra. Happy birthday for Tuesday, January 5, 2021. Optimistic, resilient, and resourceful, your confidence helps bring a project to fruition this year. You so inspire others that it is a success. Stay flexible for its longevity. If single, a new view of love and desire develops, and you meet the mate in June. If attached, you select new goals together this year. You're the quintessential power couple, and you do it your way. Gemini makes you feel reborn. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 4 stars. Be careful about peer pressure. Think for yourself. Listen to your own inner guidance beyond advice offered. Others will tend to be very adventurous and optimistic. You can learn a lot by observing the successes as well as the failures of others. Tonight, relax. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 4 stars. Your clever expression of ideas converts others to your way of thinking. Health and vitality are improving. Examine new herbal teas or treat yourself to a massage. Incense or aromatic oils also do much to enhance well-being. Tonight, be gentle to yourself. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 4 stars. The winter season evokes sentiment and memories. This can involve contact with someone you knew long ago. January's short, dark days favor meditation. Include pine and sage aromatherapy to enhance strength and wellness. Tonight, dance like no one's watching. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 5 stars. A family member might need encouragement. Accept relatives as they are and resist the temptation to try to change them. A house blessing helps promote harmony. Seek ways to improve living arrangements. A home improvement project or move is possible. Tonight, early Betty buys. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. You will sense a time of rebirth and renewal today. You will have new insights about childhood friends and school years. Ecology, recycling, and visiting rummage sales and resale shops are all activities that may interest you. Tonight, answer old emails and calls. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 5 stars. Enjoy shopping for beautiful, meaningful gifts. It's a materialistic cycle. You will appreciate the comfort and freedom that having enough money can bring and may find yourself working hard to assure a better standard of living. Tonight, excellent quality of work. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 5 stars. The day begins with enthusiasm. You are dynamic and at the center of activity. Group activity and innovations in your approach to work will be in focus. This marks the start of great hope and improvements. Tonight, a new richness comes into your life. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 4 stars. Today sheds light on just how important you are to others. You will be in tune with those who are in need of solace. You relieve the loneliness of others and win a new friend. Tonight, Your intuition is guiding you. Heed it. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 5 stars. You have more vitality and feel able to take charge of your life. Exercise appeals. Spirituality deepens. Psychology and other social sciences interest you. Your inner universe is beginning to expand, and you are about to embark on a quest of self-analysis. Tonight? Wow. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 5 stars. Faraway places with exotic names beckon as the day begins, but career becomes more of a focus. Your superb communication skills and charm carry you forward professionally. Online social events planned by coworkers can lead to a promotion. Tonight, online networking. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 4 stars. People listen to your ideas with more patience, and stress dissipates. It's an optimum day to crystallize plans and make appointments. Words have hidden nuances that can guide you in dealing with those you love the most. Tonight, contact a friend who is far away. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 4 stars. Success comes today if you are in tune with popular ideas. Understand what has mass appeal. Conformity adds a smoothness and elegance to all you do. It's a time to strengthen natural aptitudes. Tonight, you will communicate especially well. Born today, astrologer Jean Dixon, 1904, actor Robert Duvall, 1931, actress Diane Keaton, 1946.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.